Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning. You know, I'm a trained opera singer, as you know, John, and so I've had to pronounce a lot of things in my life. But this one, I'm not even going to try. Here's some people on CNN and MSNBC trying to talk about the volcano in Iceland.
Eyjafjallajökull.
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 Yeah, this is a this.
It's hard enough living in Iceland. You have to speak Icelandic as well.
Right. They don't. They seem to not mind it. Here's actually, I went to go and try and research this and figure out how to pronounce this volcano properly. Here's the guide.
Eyjafjallajökull.
Does that help you?
It's fascinating, just the diversity of language. That's
I'm
amazing.
Just going to go with volcano in Iceland.
It's
Here's
a serious
the thing.
Story, yeah.
It is. It erupted for the second time in a month yesterday. This is the first time, though, that this volcano has erupted since 1821. It's thrown a giant cloud of silicate ash all over Europe. It's caused chaos for travelers. Airspace has been shut down in European countries today, including Germany, Poland, and Britain. A no-flight zone extended to Austria. Joining us again, Charisse Jones. She covers the airline industry for USA Today. And also with us, Dr. Matthew Roberts. He's a scientist working at the Icelandic Meteorological Office, and he flew over the volcano last night. He joins me now on the line from Reykjavik. Good morning, Dr. Roberts.
Good morning.
Can you tell me a little bit about this volcano? How serious of an eruption is it?
It's a surprisingly small eruption. By volcanic standards, it would be described as a minor explosive eruption. The twist in the story is the mantle of glacial ice over the erupting volcano. Eyjafjallajökull is known as a stratovolcano. It has very steep sides. It's quite similar to Mount Redoubt, for example, in Alaska. And the eruption that's taking place has melted a large quantity of ice in the surface crater of the volcano. And it's the interaction of this glacial ice and the magma, the molten rock, which is coursing its way to the surface of the Earth, it's this interaction that's created a large quantity of pulverized, fine-grained rock. And the reason why this is happening, and it's easy to imagine, very hot, molten material interacting with ice. The molten rock is cooled very quickly. It's quenched. This material fragments into very tiny glassy particles, and it's that material that's been lofted into the atmosphere by the abundant quantity of steam that's been produced by the melting ice.
I understand that the fissure at this point is now a mile and a half long or so, and that the real danger is once this ash has cleared, the real danger is this flooding, and that could extend across a huge part of Iceland.
Well, what's that? We know from a flight that we took over the volcano last night that there is a fissure and a gaping hole in the top of the ice cap. But thankfully, there's a limited supply of ice available in this crater. This crater is like a crucible, really, and we've already melted about one-third of the ice that's available. So, yes, there is the possibility of further glacial floods, but we assume now that they'll be smaller in magnitude. So I think these floods will only create very localized hazards. The next question is, how will this eruption evolve? This is an eruption that we haven't observed instrumentally before. We don't really know that much about its geological character, and it seems at the moment it's just sort of flexing its muscles and showing us what it's capable of, these explosive bursts of ash that have been rocketed into the sky. Let's hope the situation doesn't change. At the moment, there isn't, from our radar observations, there isn't large quantities of ash leaving the eruption site. So thankfully for European air traffic, there is no further ash clouds on their way over the North Atlantic. So I'm hoping after
That's
the existing material in the sky is dispersed, air traffic can return to normal.
Okay, I'm going to talk to you in just a moment more about the future of this volcano, but let's go back to Charisse Jones, who covers the airline industry for USA Today. Charisse, they've been saying that this disruption in air traffic is the worst since the 9/11 tragedy, and I'm wondering how expensive a disruption is this with air traffic down for possibly 3 or 4 days.
You know, it could probably be in the tens of millions of dollars. I mean, the big issue is that airlines are in a position where they may have to refund money to passengers whose flights have been canceled. If you are going to rebook a flight, you know, if you decide that you don't want to take a risk in the next 2 or 3 days, you can change your ticket itinerary, but that means that you don't have to pay the penalty fee, which brings in a lot of money to the airlines. And so, you know, London is a real business hub. You know, it's a real portal. It's where many people from around the world go to connect to other parts of the world. And it's a real center for business travel as well, which is really lucrative for the airline industry, which has been in a lot of trouble. So to have the airspace over Britain in particular closed for a day or two or three is monumentally expensive to the industry and can really rack into the tens of millions of dollars.
So, Dr. Matthew Roberts, one thing that many scientists have been saying is that when this particular volcano erupts, in the past, it often means that a larger, much larger volcano neighboring also erupts. Are you watching the Katla volcano?
Yes, closely. We have geological and historical evidence that the two neighboring volcanoes often erupt simultaneously. So, of course, with one eruption taking place, we're keeping a very close seismic watch on the Katla volcano, which admittedly poses far greater aviation hazards. It's a much larger volcano, an enormous quantity of ice available for melting, and is renowned for explosive so-called basaltic volcanic eruptions. Hmm.
Dr. Roberts, can I try my Icelandic out on you?
Of course.
There's this word called Jökulhlaup, which actually describes a huge melt of glacial ice, and it's actually been responsible for carving the earth all over the world, including the American Western states. How significant is something like this?
These events, if they're of a high intensity, they can be landscape-changing events. I witnessed a glacial flood last night from the air, and I was almost literally reduced to tears. We saw a debris flow propagating from the glacier edge. It was over a mile in diameter. It was propagating with tremendous speed, a speed at which you couldn't out-sprint, and it was literally mowing down all material in its path.
Wow.
So it was awe-inspiring, literally.
Charisse, that is Dr. Matthew Roberts. He's a scientist working at the Icelandic Meteorologic Office, the National Weather Center. He flew over the volcano, as he describes last night. He joined us from Reykjavik, Iceland. And Charisse Jones spoke with us as well. She covers the airline industry for USA Today. Charisse, quickly, when will we see air traffic back to normal? Do you know?
We have no idea. I mean, if this cloud dissipates, we may be able to get back to normal by Sunday, but this cloud could be around for days to come. So you just need to call your airline and find out what's going on before you head to the airport.
Okay. Thanks so much. Charisse Jones covers the airline industry for USA Today.